Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and we welcome you to the School for Successful Ranching. My name is Sherry Flo, and I'll be moderating the session today. At this time, wanted to ask if everyone could please turn off their cell phones or place them on silent, if you would, and remove your hats. We'd appreciate it. Also, as we begin, we would like to take this time to thank our generous sponsors of the School for Successful Ranching for their support of this program and commitment to producer education. They have small displays set up in the hallway on this floor, and we ask that you visit their booths in the expo and say thank you. We couldn't do this program without them. Our sponsors include Capital Farm Credit, Dow AgroSciences, Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Merck Animal Health, Stay Tough Fence Manufacturing, Bayer Micro, Diacero, Texas Range Minerals, Neogene GeneSeq, Rabo AgriFinance, Texas Beef Quality Assurance, and Sylvius Insurance Group. Our next presentation today is entitled Supplementation, How, What, and When, and is presented by Dr. Darren Henry. Dr. Henry is a beef cattle nutritionist and a new faculty member in the Department of Animal and Food Sciences at Texas Tech University. He was born and raised in Southeast Texas, and his family owns and operates a small cow-calf operation in Montalba. After graduating high school, Darren completed a BS in Agricultural Leadership and Development and Animal Science at Texas A&M University. While in College Station, Darren had the opportunity to take a semester of class in the Animal Science Department at the University of Sao Paulo in Brazil. Upon returning to the U.S., Darren graduated from Texas A&M and moved east to earn a MS and PhD at the University of Florida, North Florida Research and Education Center, also known as NFREC, in Marianna, Florida. The NFREC serves as a working commercial ranch with a 350-head herd of mostly Angus and Brangus cross cattle. During his six-year tenure at the NFREC, Darren worked to improve the efficiency of cow-calf and stocker production by utilizing strategies to reduce enteric CH4 production. Now in Lubbock, Darren is working to provide producers with information that can help improve efficiency while reducing the environmental impact of beef cattle production in terms of water conservation and greenhouse gas production. Darren's wife, Francine Henry, is also a beef cattle nutritionist, and she is completing her PhD at the University of Florida, investigating methods to improve forage quality. Although Darren does not have a formal extension appointment at Texas Tech, he is always willing to work with producers across Texas and surrounding areas. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Henry.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me in the back? Is it working? Move it up a little bit closer like that. How about now? Better? Sherry, I'm sorry. I did not realize that you were going to have to read that. Whenever they asked me to write a bio, I thought that was going to be online, and I figured it would be a little bit shorter. So I really apologize. Well, thank you all for coming out this afternoon. Whenever they asked me to give this presentation, they just sent me the title Supplementation. And if you've worked in the beef cattle industry for very long, or not even if you've worked there long at all, you realize that there's 100 different directions we could go with supplementation. And so today, whenever I was writing this presentation and building the slideshow, I had to decide what I was going to focus on and what I really felt like would be important for y'all to take home today. So we're going to go through it, and we'll talk about a little bit of the considerations that we need to make before we form a supplementation plan, some of the issues that go into it, and then some of the different types of supplementation products, such as byproducts, that we can use and find here in our area of the United States. So I'm going to start off with a little figure here that kind of explains to us a little bit about why we need to supplement. So to set it up, on our x-axis, this horizontal axis right here, we have months since calving. And you can assume that this is January. So assume that we're calving in January. And on our y-axis, our vertical axis, we have pounds per day. And this is going to be for nutrient requirements. In our dotted line up here, This is going to be the TDN, or the total digestible nutrients, which is a proxy for energy, that our pasture is providing, assuming a warm season, something like a coastal Bermuda or a Bahia grass pasture. And then on the bottom here, similarly, this blue line is going to be what that pasture is providing in crude protein. Well, what we have in our green line that comes along the top, that is going to be the requirements, the energy requirements for a cow, and in this case, this is about a 1,200-pound cow that she's lactating about 20 pounds of milk per day. And then the orange bar is going to represent her crude protein requirements. So what these spots that I've filled in red, well, that's when the forage is not providing the energy that animal is needing for production, and on the bottom, again, the crude protein, okay? So it's at these points when we really need to supplement our cows, and that makes sense, right? Most of us have some type of winter supplementation program. So this is, we'll assume that this is January. So she's calving in January. And so, you know, during the winter, our warm season forage is dormant, starts to grow during the spring and summer. And at this point, our pastures very often are producing enough energy and protein to be able to supply that animal with what she needs. And we can see we also have the same requirements, or the same output from our pasture. In this case, this figure is looking at a replacement heifer. So if we are producing our own heifers on our place, at some point we're going to breed them, right? And then as we breed them and as they're growing, their requirements are increasing because they are a growing animal, but they also have an animal growing inside them. So at some point we're going to have to start supplementing that growing heifer as well so that she's provided enough energy and enough protein to be able to support her own growth and the growth of the fetus inside of her. So before we go into some of the other things for supplementation, you know, you have to consider that there are all kinds of feed products out there. And some of the bigger differences are we feeding some type of a grain? Are we feeding corn, cracked corn, steam flakes? Is that something we're going to do? Or are we going to feed something of a byproduct? Well, what we need to consider, obviously, is the cost of those feedstuffs. Is what's the corn prices doing at the time that we're looking at buying supplementation? Can we buy enough that we can buy in futures and try to get those costs down by buying a few months ahead? We have to figure out what's available. You know, I'm going to talk about some byproducts on here today that, depending upon which area of Texas or the United States that you're living in, you might not have the same access to those byproducts that we may have in the panhandle of Texas, for example, around Lubbock. And finally, we also need to consider storage. Do you have the storage capability to have certain types of supplements? If you decided that you wanted to buy wet corn gluten feed or wet distillers, do you have a spot that you can keep that? And these are all considerations that it's not just with supplementation that we need to consider this. It's with anything that we're buying in the cattle industry. So talking about costs a little bit, and I am not an economist, so forgive me for my simple cowboy math, but it's a good way to be able to look at what you're really buying and what you're really paying for. So very often we just consider the price per ton of a feed product because that's what we see in our checkbook. That's what we see at the end of the year whenever we're considering how much money we had to spend per cow. But something that is important to consider is the price per nutrient that you are buying. Because we're going to buy different types of feedstuffs for different reasons, whether that be energy or protein, thinking back to our first figure that we looked at. So this is, I'm not going to try to turn this into a math class, but just to figure out how to price those nutrients. You can see here, and I have it as dollars per pound of nutrient. We're going to take that price per ton, divide it by 1,000 so that we get it in dollars per pound, and then we're going to divide that. We're going to consider the dry matter of the feed stuff because we don't care about the water. You know, cattle can get enough water from our tanks. And then we're going to multiply that dry matter over 100 by the percent of that nutrient within that feed product, okay? So, for example, and I made this presentation at the beginning of March, so these numbers may be just a tick off, but so about 20 days ago, corn gluten feed was at about $155 a ton. And we know that corn gluten feed has about 90% dry matter. It's going to have 80% total digestible nutrients. And again, that's a proxy for energy. And 22% crude protein. So whenever we put these numbers into this formula that I had up here, we can see that whenever we're considering the amount of energy in that feed stuff, that it comes out to be about 11 cents per pound of TDN for corn gluten feed and about 35 cents per pound of TDN of crude protein. And this is because there is more energy in the feed stuff than there is crude protein. And crude protein is often the most expensive nutrient in a feed stuff. But it always depends on what type of feed stuff that is and what that feed stuff is designed for. So I went through, like I said, earlier this month, and I just came up with a couple different supplements and looked at their price and calculated how much each pound of nutrient cost in these feed stuff. So this corn gluten feed, that's what we should be feed, not fed. That's what we just calculated on the previous slide. The one below that, soybean whole pellets, you see it's a little bit cheaper on dollars per ton, but the energy value is going to be about the same, right around 10, 11 cents. However, if you look at the crude protein, it costs almost double what the crude protein in our corn gluten feed cost. Reason being, soybean hulls are more of an energy supplement. They don't have the concentration of crude protein isn't as high as what is in corn gluten feed, so that crude protein that you're buying is more expensive in the soybean hulls. So whenever we're considering which supplementation feed stuff that we're going to use, that's why you need to consider what do we need to supplement. If we're needing crude protein in our diet, we're probably not going to choose soybean hulls over corn gluten feed. And I have a couple others on here. Gin trash, distiller's grains, which we'll talk about a little bit more. And what I have on the bottom I'm comparing that to is Tifton 85 Bermuda grass hay. So, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the presentation as well, because I'm going to refer back to these numbers, but just estimating that a ton of hay is about $120, 12 cents per pound of energy, and about 65 cents per pound of crude protein. So we'll keep that in mind as we go through the rest of the presentation. So there are some other costs that go into supplementation, though, right? Unfortunately, it's not just that cost of going out and contracting a ton or however much of feed that you're going to supplement those animals. And this is some data from an experiment that was done at the University of Minnesota by Dr. Alfredo DiCostanzo. And what they were doing was they were considering the loss that is incurred whenever you're feeding hay. And whether you are feeding hay as whole or chopped, processed on this table, and whether you were feeding that on the ground, just sticking it in the pen with the cattle, or if you had some type of a structure, in this case it was a hay ring, okay? Well, what they found was, and as we may expect, whenever they were feeding cows this hay in a hay ring, they had significantly less loss than whenever they were just putting the hay on the ground. And we've all seen that when cattle get in there, and if we don't restrict their access to that hay bale at some way, they're going to step on it, they're going to pee and poop on it, and they're not going to eat everything, and we're going to have some waste. So whenever we considered the percentage of that, there was about 19% waste for those animals that were consuming hay that was not in a hay ring, and only about 4 to 5% waste for those animals that did have a hay ring. Okay, so whenever we consider that, there was a 14.5% difference in waste between the hay ring cattle and those cattle that were consuming the hay directly off the ground. And if we assume a 100 cow herd, they're going to need about 3,100, 3,200 pounds of dry matter in a 120-day haying season, assuming that we're having to feed them for 120 days throughout the winter. Well, total, that's going to be about 45,000, 46,000 pounds of dry matter. And what I have here is saying that we're losing 1,800 pounds, nearly $1,900 from all this hay that we're losing. But what I didn't tell you here is this number that I used was $85 a ton. So that hay earlier that I was telling you about, the $120 hay that's Tifton 85 Bermuda, a little bit higher quality, we're talking about a poor quality Bahia grass hay here, and we're still losing nearly $2,000 annually just from that difference in loss. That study that I showed you from Alfredo's lab in Minnesota, they also went on to look at storage, and found that depending upon your storage of your hay, you can lose 9 or 10% of your dry matter if it's stored incorrectly. You know, a lot of us have hay traps, and we just let the hay sit out in a hay trap and it gets rained on. Well, that loses, you're going to lose dry matter in that case. There's a certain amount, and it can be up to 10%. So we can get close to 23, 25% losses in dry matter annually, depending upon how we store that hay and how we feed that hay. So again, forgive my simple math, but let's dive into that a little bit with that $120 hay that we were talking about earlier, that Tifton 85. If we assume that we bought that hay for $120, or if that's how much it cost us on our own operation, think if you're producing your own hay, and we say that we're going to lose 25% if we're not storing it correctly, if we're not feeding it correctly, well, that $120 hay just became $160 a ton hay. That now is 16 cents per pound of TDN, assuming about 55% TDN. Well, at that point, if we don't have the correct storage, if we're not able to feed that hay in the manner in which we can save some of those losses, it might be time to think about some other type of supplementation strategy, which in this case I have a 50-50 corn gluten feed soybean whole mixture, assuming about 8 cents per pound of TDN. That comes out to be, comes out to be half the price of what that hay is when we're feeding that hay as an energy source. So these are some of the kind of things that we need to consider, not just that initial cost that we see whenever we sign that check. And a component of the cost of supplementation that we often forget to think about, because a lot of us are running our own cattle, a lot of us are feeding our own cattle, but we don't always consider the labor cost that comes into play. Whether you're feeding your cattle by hand and you're taking those hours that you could be doing something else, or using some type of equipment to put out hay, the time that you're putting in that, or if you're in a bad situation and you're having to feed tree limbs to your cattle, all of that takes labor, and that needs to come into your considerations. You know, if you feed liquid feed, an example, I had an experiment during my PhD where I had to feed molasses to cattle every day, but instead of having a lick tank, my boss thought it would be a good idea if I hand-fed them every day, 75 head, and there was a lot of labor involved in that. So those are the kind of costs that we need to consider further than just the cost of that feed. So I split up the presentation a little bit, and I'm going to have a couple of these take-home messages throughout it. But this first one is that we can't forget to account for those costs that are associated with loss and those costs that are associated with labor. Okay? So, now I want to move into some of the different feedstuffs that we might see. And what I decided was, instead of going into and talking a lot about corn or sorghum, any type of whole grain that you might process and get a little bit higher quality out of that grain, I decided that I was going to stick with byproducts, because 9 out of 10 times we're going to be able to find those byproducts a little bit cheaper than we're going to be able to buy that grain. So whenever we are looking at that, and I've said it several times today, but we need to consider the protein and the energy, because that's usually what our cattle are lacking. We need to provide something in there. But there are some other things that we need to consider. I have in here fat, the amount of fat in there. Used to, whenever we fed distillers, we had to watch the fat content because they left a lot of fat. We don't have that issue as much anymore because they found ways to find value in that fat, so they're starting to remove that from our distillers' grains. But we don't want to let the fat of a diet get above 5-6% in our grazing animals, because once we get above that mark, we start to have negative effects on our fiber digestion. And on a cow-calf herd or a group of stalker calves that are consuming mainly forage, well, if we start to inhibit the digestibility of that fiber, well, we're obviously going to have a few issues with performance. In some of our byproducts, we need to watch the sulfur content. There's been a little bit of research that has out of South Florida that has shown that whenever the sulfur content of forages gets too high, we start to see negative effects on trace mineral absorption. And if it gets high enough, we can have some health implications. And then phosphorus, we want to make sure that we don't have a lot, you know, we want to make sure that our calcium to phosphorus ratio is in a decent range. And I usually like to tell people about 1.5 to 1 calcium to phosphorus up to 4 to 1. And there's a lot of wiggle room in there. It depends on what type of diet you're feeding. But if we can get in that range, we're usually pretty decent. So I'm going to start off with corn gluten feed. It's one of the byproducts that we see quite a bit throughout the United States. It is a byproduct of the corn industry, where they remove the starch, the germ, and the gluten of the corn through the wet milling process, and what you're left is this corn gluten feed. It's a fairly decent byproduct because we can use it for crude protein or energy. You see, it has about 20 to 25% crude protein, 80% TDN, and that fiber that's in it, about 37% NDF, which is a neutral detergent fiber. It's one of the fractions. We know that that fiber is readily digestible, especially when we're considering the wet corn gluten feed rather than the dry. And so just a give you an idea of how digestible this is and how good of a product it is. In feedlot cattle, a lot of times we can use wet corn gluten feed in our step-up diets so that we can replace corn in that diet and allow those animals to become adapted to that high-grain diet in the end and still get some gain out of them. So a study that was done at the University of Missouri back in the early 90s, so this is some fairly old data, they were looking at supplementing with either corn or corn gluten feed, okay, the grain or the byproduct of that grain. And what they were doing was they were replacing alfalfa haylage in a diet. So they had 70 steers, and they either replaced the alfalfa at 20 or 60%. So in the end, what they did was they had five diets. They had cattle that were on a alfalfa haylage diet solely. They had cattle that were on alfalfa hay with 20% corn, 60% corn, 20% corn gluten feed, or 60% corn gluten feed. Well, whenever we consider the performance of those animals, and here we have dry matter intake, we see that the dry matter intake of those animals was greater for those that were receiving some type of supplementation versus those that were receiving alfalfa haylage only. But whenever we looked at the difference between the corn and the corn gluten feed, there was no difference in intake. We also saw that whenever we considered average daily gain, there was a difference between those that were receiving some type of supplementation versus those that were receiving just alfalfa. But again, whenever we considered the differences between the corn and the corn gluten feed, there was no difference. And we saw that same pattern with the feed to gain. The animals that were receiving some type of supplement were more efficient. They were gaining more on less feed, but there was no difference between the corn and corn gluten feed, showing that we can, in this type of situation, replace corn with corn gluten feed and get the same gain out of our cattle that we can with corn. The next one I want to talk about, sticking with the corn industry, is distillers' grains. And distillers became really big in the a few years ago whenever the corn prices got really high because of the ethanol industry. So nowadays they're producing corn and sorghum distillers. We feed it a lot in the U.S. and especially in the Midwest throughout the feedlots. The feedlots are full of corn gluten. You're getting less now, but they still have quite a bit. It's a fairly good protein source. It has about three times as much protein as corn itself. And it's a really good energy source. You can see it has 85 to 95% TDN. Okay? And just to give you an idea, whenever they're producing distillers, for about every 100 pounds of corn that's processed, you get 33 pounds of distillers. And so you see that it's taken out two-thirds of the product. Therefore, that's why we get about three times more protein and energy in or more protein and fiber in our distillers than we do in just cracked corn or steam-flaked corn. But there are a lot of different options for distillers. You can get just dried distillers' grains, wet distillers' grains, modified, which is going to be a not totally dry but not as wet, kind of an intermediate moisture content. And then during the process of removing that, making that ethanol from the starch of that corn grain and getting down to the distillers, we also get solubles. And so you can also find these products, the distillers, with solubles that increases the quality quite a bit. But we still see issues with sulfur because there's quite a bit of variability with the sulfur content in our distillers' grains. And the problem is that it's not just between ethanol plants that we see this variability, because we get the sulfur content for whenever they are producing the distillers. They wash the tanks with sulfuric acid. Well, some of the ethanol producers might use a little bit more sulfuric acid than another, so you get that. But even within those plants, we're going to see some variability. And it's gotten a lot better over the last couple of years, but it's still something that we need to consider whenever we are buying and feeding distillers. So, like I said a while ago, you may have some issues with trace mineral absorption if our sulfur content in our diet is too high in our grazing animals. And if it gets really high, in grazing animals, it's going to be very difficult to get there, but there have been some situations. But polioencephalomalacia is an issue with the brain, and that can be caused by highly available sulfur in the rumen. But the new NRC says that for grazing cattle, we can have about 0.5% of the diet dry matter being sulfur, and our grain-fed animals, the ones that are going to be on a concentrate or feedlot diets, that actually should be 0.35, but they can't have as much sulfur due to the pH of the rumen. So when that pH gets low, as it does in a feedlot diet, that's when we start to see issues with polio. And this is just a figure. You can download these slides from the cattle raisers. There's a phone number that you can text that I'm sure Sherry will remind us of later. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about this, but you can see the process of how we get to these distillers, whether they be the wet, dry, or the modified distillers. So I want to go over a little bit of the research that's been done with distillers on both feedlot cattle, and because that's where a lot of our distillers have been fed, but also some grazing cattle as well. So this is a summary that was produced by the University of Nebraska. They have a fairly large research feedlot in Nebraska. And so this covers about 66 pens of cattle with about 581 head is what that should be. And what they found was that whenever they included distillers' grains, in this case this is dry distillers' grains in feedlot diets, they had an increase in the dry matter intake up to a certain point, about 20 to 30% of the diet being distillers, it planed out. The cattle started, the increase, they didn't see an increase in intake once they got up to 30 or 40% of the diet. And again, this is replacing corn with distillers' grains, just trying to add that energy back into the diet. Well, those same cattle, even though there was that quadratic effect where the increased intake to a certain point and then planed out, they found a linear increase in average daily gain of cattle that were consuming distillers' grains rather replaced from corn at, again, 0, 10, 20, 30 or 40%. And this increase in average daily gain it also led to a reduction in the feed to gain. So these cattle in the feedlot were becoming more efficient. They were gaining more with less feed than the cattle that were only on corn due to that processing, converting that corn into distillers. So I know, I imagine most people here are not feedlot producers. Most of us are going to be in the cow-calf or the stockering side of things. So I found some data that it has some really nice results for us to look at. And this is from some pasture cattle that came out of the Northwest County in the Panhandle, where they were using about 130 head of black-hided cattle that was grazing just native Texas range in the Panhandle. And they had side oats, blue grama, blue stem, and buffalo grass. And what they did was they supplemented these cattle at either zero, where they received nothing, they were just on the grass, 0.2, 0.4, or 0.6% of their body weight with distillers' grains. What they found was that by supplementing those cattle with anything, they were getting an increase in about 20 pounds of final body weight. So whenever they finished this grazing trial, those cattle were about 20 pounds heavier whenever they received some sort of supplementation, and there wasn't a lot of difference between the different amounts of supplementation. But they found a linear increase in average daily gain, which we would expect, right? If we're providing some type of supplementation, some type of energy, we're going to get gains on those cattle. But what we have to consider is, are those gains going to allow us to either break even or hopefully make a few more dollars on top of what we're actually having to pay for that supplementation? So now I want to move into soy hulls, which is, again, we talked about a little earlier. It's more of an energy product, and it's a byproduct of the soybean meal and oil industry. Doesn't have as much crude protein as some of these others that we've spoke of, but it does have fairly good energy content. And it's very often used to replace hay during the winter. And again, could be because of a lack of hay, or it could be because of hay losses. Normally, we're going to find this in the pelleted form, where they go ahead and grind those soy holes up. But one thing that we need to consider is it's going to be less effective fiber, so that they're not going to have that physical stimulation of the rumen that we're going to get out of a whole soybean hole, an unground one. And we also need to be careful about acidosis. Unfortunately, I have seen producers who thought that they could feed soybean whole pellets ad libitum, or as much as the cattle wanted, and had a few cattle bloat and go through acidosis, and some did eventually die. So a lot of times when we feed soybean hulls, we're going to add that in a mixture. And that 50-50 mixture is a fairly common corn gluten feed soybean hull mixture that we can use because of the different rates of digestion. So some more data looking at soybean hulls in this case. This is replacing forage in a, these are limit-fed cattle, backgrounding type situation, where they were either receiving a hay-based diet that was about 65% hay, 30% corn, and a little bit of molasses. They had a corn-based diet that was 76% corn and a little bit of alfalfa and some molasses. Then we had a soy hull-based diet where it was mostly soy hull pellets. It was 91% with a little bit of molasses on the bottom as well. And then these corn-based and soybean hull based diets, they fed that at either 1.5 or 2.25% of the body weight. Well, what they found here was that there, whenever there was some type of supplementation with soy hulls, there was a reduction in dry matter intake. The cattle that were on that hay-based diet consumed more dry matter than those that were on the soybean hull-based diet. And that came out to be that there was no difference in the feed to gain. So these animals that were consuming the soybean hulls, they had the same amount of efficiency as those on the hay-based diet. Well, unfortunately, they didn't, because obviously, if they didn't eat as much, but the efficiency was the same, well, that means they didn't gain as much either as that hay-based diet. But that hay-based diet had fairly high quality. It was alfalfa hay, had some corn in it as well. But in the end, because the efficiencies were the same, that's where it goes back to, we have to consider the cost. Is that lack of gain that we're not getting, is it going to, would we get more from feeding a cheaper product, that soybean hulls, than we would from the actual pounds that we're going to sell at the end of the day? The last supplement I'm going to talk about is liquid feed. And liquid feed is fairly popular in Texas, I know, and in the southeastern United States, we fed a lot of molasses while I was there in Florida. And so it's a byproduct of the sugar industry. Once they come through and remove all the juice and of the sugar cane and get down and boil it down to get their sugar out of it, what we're left with is molasses. We use it for a lot of different things. It can be a binding agent in our textured feeds. We see it a lot. It's going to increase the palatability. It can be a carrier for minerals or certain medicines if need be. It has a lot of sugar, about 30 to 45%. Not a lot of crude protein, right? About 6%. And the sulfur is going to vary in molasses as well. Luckily, nowadays, we have a lot of big molasses companies that are going to be able to blend their molasses to provide a fairly consistent product, but still something that we need to consider whenever we're buying something. And again, here's another figure about how we're going to get to molasses through the sugar process, but the main point is that there are several different molasses that are made, but we eat molasses as well, right? You can buy molasses in the grocery store, but it's not the same molasses that we're going to feed cattle. It's a little bit lower grade. There's less sugar in the supplement that we're going to feed to cattle. So some of the research that's been done has shown that it can increase organic matter digestibility, which is going to be the bulk of our supplements, of our diet. It can have some negative effects on fiber digestibility if the amount of molasses that you're feeding gets too high, because it can reduce the pH of the rumen, which can have negative effects on fiber degradation. Not a lot of research has shown effects of dry matter intake whenever you're supplementing molasses with a hay-based diet. But as we would expect, most of the time we do see increases in average daily gain and gain to feed, our efficiency, because we're adding some sort of energy supplement to our diet. Well, a few years ago when the biodiesel industry really got kicking, one of the byproducts that was made in that industry is crude glycerol. And because the producers didn't know what they were going to do with the product, they decided to see if we could feed it to cattle. So it's a great source of energy, about 80%. People have looked at it by replacing corn in feedlot diets. And it has the potential to reduce the cost of liquid feeds and increase the energy if the price of the crude glycerol matches what we're looking for. And this is just how we come up with crude glycerol whenever we have the production of biodiesel. It's just one of our byproducts. So this is a study that my wife did for her master's at the University of Florida, and it has a lot of really nice data in it. What we did was we had some crossbred heifers. These were Angus crossbred heifers, and they were being fed a Tifton 85 Bermuda grass hay. And you can see it's fairly decent hay, 12% crude protein, about 55% TDN. And then we fed three groups, either 1, 3, or 5 pounds of a 50-50 molasses crude glycerol mixture. What we found was that apparent total tract digestibility, so the digestibility of the dry matter and the organic matter of the feed, which again is the main portion of any feed, we had a linear increase whenever we provided the liquid feed. We also had a linear increase in NDF and ADF. And what we suspect was by providing this energy with the hay, we were able to boost the fermentation. We were able to provide the bacteria in that rumen a little bit of energy so that they could further break down the fiber that was in those forages. And as I said, whenever we're feeding an energy, obviously we're going to have an increase in gain. So we saw that linear increase in gain from whenever we look at the animals that were being fed only hay up to those that were being fed the 5 pounds of the 50-50 molasses glycerol mixture. So let's talk a little bit about numbers with this. So at the time that we did this experiment, it cost the molasses glycerol blend cost about $220 a ton. Okay, the hay we were feeding was about $100 a ton at the time, and they were eating about 12 pounds of hay each day in dry matter. So the cost of that supplementation, the 5 pounds of molasses glycerol, was about 55 cents per head per day. Okay, well, whenever we consider the control that was receiving just the $100 a ton hay, that comes out to be about 5 cents per pound. Multiply that by 12 pounds and you get 60 cents. And if you'll remember, these animals were gaining about 2.8 pounds, 2.9 pounds per day. So our feed cost of gain was 21 cents per pound of gain for these growing animals. Well, whenever we look at those that were on the 5-pound treatment, because we have to add this 55 cents per day into our feed cost, and they were gaining a little bit more, 3.4 pounds a day, what we see is the feed cost of gain was 33 cents. So it cost more to get a pound on these animals. Well, whenever we look and stretch this out a little bit further and say, okay, let's assume we're going to supplement our animals for 90 days throughout the winter. That's going to be about $10.80 per head in added feed cost from this liquid feed. Well, if we look at the amount of gain that they were getting, that extra gain from that 2.8 to the 3.4 pounds per day, that comes out to be just shy of 50 pounds per head. And I know this number is a little high right now, but if we assume that we're selling them for $1.50 a pound, that extra 50 pounds is going to gain us $74 a head. So whenever we look at, well, we had to pay 10 extra, almost 11 extra dollars, but we have the opportunity to gain 75 extra dollars if the market price for our cattle is right. So again, it all goes back to the opportunity and the situation that you're in. But my second message is that maybe it's time for us to start considering feed as an investment rather than just a cost. If we consider that we're investing in the energy, we're investing in that protein, that we can provide that animal with the resources it needs to gain its optimal amount, then we can push back some of these costs. And here's just a couple other byproducts. Cotton seed that we might see, good protein source, a lot of energy because of the fat in it. We have to watch out for the phosphorus gossypol. Citrus pulp or beet pulp, we can also find it's going to be an energy source, not a lot of crude protein. If we're looking for fillers, peanut hulls, not a lot of crude protein, only 8%. Very little TDN, only 25%. Very indigestible product, peanut hulls. We want to be careful with ground peanut hulls, though, if this is something that you can come into contact with because of compaction. A lot of times it'll block the hole from the rumen into the omasum, and nothing will pass through, and that can kill cattle, so we want to beware of that. And then also our gin trash, it's going to be low in protein and have a little bit of energy, but if you're looking for some filler, a decent filler. The last thing I want to touch on real quick in the last 5 minutes is a tool that we developed at the University of Florida in the last couple years, and it's something that you can download from this website. So I really encourage you to use something like this. I'm not saying you have to use this one. There are multiple ones out there. But what we tried to do was simplify some of the calculations that you need to determine how much you need to supplement your animals. So I'm going to go through and show you a couple screenshots about how to use the program and let you make your own decision on whether this would be beneficial for you or not. But once you download it, it's an Excel-based program. On the homepage tab that we have here, you'll see that there's a couple of orange bars. And in these orange, that's where you can actually add something in. These other cells that aren't orange, those are going to be the outputs. That's going to be where the program is giving you some sort of information on what you're feeding or what you should feed. And I know it's hard to see. It's hard to see up here, so I imagine it is from the back. But some of the inputs that you put in, is it a cow, a heifer, a bull? How many months have they been lactating? So when did they calve? What type of breed is it? Is it a English or a cross or a Brahman type animal? Put in their body weight in pounds, their estimated body weight, how many animals you have in that herd, and how many days you want to supplement that. And then this next section is going to be about the hay that you're feeding during the winter. How much you had to pay for that hay, how much you think each bale of hay weighs, what the dry matter is, and you need to take a sample of that hay and get it sent off for analysis. And I really, really encourage people to do that, because if you don't know what you're feeding, if you don't know the quality of what you're feeding, you can never develop a supplement that's going to match where you're lacking. So you just include those there. The next thing you're going to do is include how much waste you think you're going to have. And again, thinking back to some of that data I showed you from Minnesota that shows whether you're using some type of structure or if you're feeding on the ground, that's going to have an effect on that. And your storage as well. If you're storing it outside, you're going to have more loss than if you're storing it in a barn. And you can include, we have it at 0% loss, which is a perfect situation, right, that we won't ever see. 10% loss or up to 30 or 50% loss as well. So once we include all that information in there, we're going to click on here, this green button, which says the feeds library. Because what we added in here was another tab where you can go in and you can add supplements that are byproducts or feedstuffs that you have in your area. You can add their costs, what their TDN and crude protein concentration is, And once you add that, you'll come back to the summary tab, and you can input whichever feed stuff you want to, and then play with the numbers. And what this program is designed to do is to tell you whether you have a shortage, if it's in red, or a surplus of TDN, your energy, or your crude protein. And then it's going to give you a cost per head per day of the supplement, and then a total cost per head per day with the hay and the supplement combined. So it's a very simple tool. You don't have to add a lot to it. All you need to know is the quality of your hay and the concentration of your energy and crude protein in your supplements, and you'll really get some benefits out of that. So my last take-home message is that as producers, we need to use the tools that are available to us to be able to provide our cattle with the resources that's going to allow them to reach their genetic potential. Okay? And that's our job as stewards and producers of cattle. So with that, I'd like to thank you and turn the floor back over to Sherry, and I'd like to answer any questions if we have time. Yes, sir. Gossy Paul, yes, sir. Okay, so the question is, whenever we're considering whole cottonseed, what is the issue with Gossy Paul, and do we see that issue with cattle? Well, Gossy Paul is a toxin that is in the cotton plant. Okay, and so if cattle got in there and grazed green cotton as it was growing, they can become toxic from this. And where you see it most of the time is in younger animals. They're going to be more liable to see the effects on them. But in our older, larger animals, we still see that if they consume enough or if they consume some over a certain amount of time. So we want to control how much of that cotton that we're putting into our diets. But cottonseed, a lot of times is turned into cottonseed meal after they remove the oil from it. And whenever that happens, it goes through a heating process. And whenever you heat Gossy Paul, it binds to other portions of that meal, and bound Gossy Paul will not hurt animals. So the only time you really have to worry about Gossy Paul is in that whole cottonseed or in the plant itself if cattle get into a cotton field. Good question, though.
Is there any level of feeding this sort of range that can prepare for it?
So the question was, is there any level of feeding distillers' grains that would impair forage intake? Right? Absolutely. If you're feeding ad libitum amounts, like if you're feeding cattle as much as they want of distillers, that can have issues because it can lower the pH of the rumen, because you're putting a highly digestible product in the rumen. It's going to drive that pH down. That's going to reduce fiber digestion, like we talked about a little bit with the molasses. And whenever you reduce fiber digestibility, you're going to have that staying in the rumen longer, which is going to make them eat less. Just like you, if you get full, you quit eating. But whenever we are supplementing distillers in cattle, you saw that there was that study that we had that I showed from the panhandle, whenever they fed at 0.2, 4, or 6% of the body weight. Well, there wasn't a lot of difference between those three supplementation programs just because the cattle are getting what they need from the pasture. But whenever you're providing more and more supplement, they're going to eat that supplement a lot of times rather than graze and forage. So if you get high enough, it will reduce intake.
To follow up on that, what about sulfur toxicity in terms of the percentage of the distillers grains at that level? Is that less than the level that you have decreased forage intake or greater? I guess what I'm asking is how much distillers should one feed maximally before you have an adverse effect either on forage intake or sulfur toxicity?
Okay. So the question is, whenever we're considering distillers again on forage intake and cattle that are grazing forage, at what level might we start seeing negative effects either from sulfur or just a reduction in forage intake? Well, with the sulfur side of things, we'll take a moment and look at that. It really depends on how much sulfur is in that distiller. So whenever we buy our byproducts, we need to get an analysis done, or make sure that whoever we're buying it from has an analysis. And as long as we don't get sulfur above 0.5% of their total dry matter intake, we won't have issues for sulfur on our grazing cattle. And a good rule of thumb you can consider is say, okay, if I think my animal weighs 1,200 pounds, that's my average cow weight, you can assume about 2 to 2.25% of their body weight being consumed in forage. Okay, so you can do that math, figure out how much you're supplementing, and see if that sulfur content is above 0.5% or not. So if you don't get above that, you're not going to have any negative effects. On the trace mineral side of things, there's been research that shows that if we get above 0.3 or 0.35%, even in grazing cattle, we may have issues with trace mineral that could lead to reproductive issues down the road. But it's not often that we have that much sulfur. Exactly, because what it is that sulfur will bind to like copper and manganese in the rumen, and it doesn't allow it to be absorbed in the small intestine, and it's drug out in the feces. Very good question. Yes, ma'am.
Can you go back to your hay balancer program?
Absolutely. Okay.
On the hay section, if you don't hay, if your bees stockpile forage,
Yes.
You can still put the type.
Exactly right.
If you're like your fertilizer or whatever money you're keeping in there.
Exactly right.
Then you could average the pounds that you have in the pasture. So, and then just test it for the other stuff.
Exactly. So that's a very good point. She brought the point, if you're feeding stockpiled forage, so rather than cutting the hay, allowing the forage to grow up and become dormant and then letting the cattle in during the dormant season, you can still use a program like this and then just send the stockpiled forage off for analysis, estimate how much forage you have in your pasture, and then be able to use this to balance for the supplementation. Exactly right. Yes, sir. Okay. Absolutely. So the corn gluten feed, even though it has a fairly high digestible fiber, it doesn't digest near as quickly as the soy hull pellets. So in the rumen, you think about it like this. In the rumen, if something digests extremely fast, such as starch and corn, we're going to have a spike in the amount of acid that is being produced by those bacteria. So if we can feed a mixture of something that doesn't allow for the digestibility to just skyrocket because the corn gluten feed has a little bit of a longer retention time in the rumen, that acid production is going to be spread out over a greater amount of time. So what you're doing is kind of diluting. It's a dilution effect by feeding that corn gluten feed. Self-feed. Oh, so you're saying I give them as much as they want, provide as much as they want. Well, you can. I don't know that I always recommend that because there's been a lot of research that shows that if we can limit feed them and feed them, first off, just what they need, you're going to be saving money because they're not going to be wasting feed. Because even though if they eat more, it doesn't necessarily mean that all that is going to stay on them as pounds of gain. They become less efficient at an ad libitum at that age, at an ad libitum amount of feed. So you really want to control how much they're eating. But as far as negative health effects, I don't think you would have to worry if you're feeding some type of a 50-50 with those soy holes. I think that's about all the time we have. Really appreciate it. A lot of good questions. And if I can ever do anything, please contact me.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Henry. As he mentioned in the slides, or about me asking about the slides, if they're going to email it for everybody who's registered. In case you were not in the opening session yesterday, they'll email it to everyone within 2 weeks along with the audio. But if you'd like to get it today, you can visit cattleraisersconvention.com/handouts or text handouts to 313131. And at this time, we're going to take a 30-minute break. Sessions will resume at 3:30, and in this room we'll have Dr. Banta of Texas A&M, who will be speaking about nutritional requirements at each stage. Okay? Thank you.